You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to the White and Blue CFL podcast. My name's Oz Davis. I'll be your co-host for the show. The other co-host for this week's edition of the show is a man I'm not speaking to, Joe Pritchard in Wisconsin. Joe, pretend I'm asking you, how's it going?
This is going to be awkward, isn't it?
Nah, I'm just grousing. Congratulations, I guess, to your hated Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, this week, I think in, what was it, 24 hours, 36 hours, that both my CFL team were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs and my beloved Colorado Rockies were eliminated from the Major League Baseball playoffs. Did we even score a run? I think we scored one run in three games.
Two, because you gave us a scare in game one.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. Another classic low scoring, you know, lots of singles Colorado Rockies game, right? And just a bad week. And the only way it could be worse vis-a-vis, you know, our professional podcasting relationship, Joe, is if your Blue Bombers had taken out my Owls out of their misery. That was called the 2018 CFL season. So we should play taps for them. We should also play taps for our in absentia co-host, Dr. Rouge's Toronto Argonauts, who were also eliminated last weekend. Any last words you want to give the eulogy here, Joe? A brief eulogy on the 2018 Toronto Argonauts?
They were so much less than they could have been.
The defending champion. The defending champion, might we point that out, Toronto Argonauts. Definitely one of the weirder CFL champions in recent history. Would not you say, Joe?
I would say so. I mean, they were 4-7 at one point last year, got hot and went all the way, and then forgot how to win.
Got hot-ish and went all the way thanks to a couple of freak plays. Yes. Right. So, bon voyage. Theoretically, let's say metaphorically, bon voyage to the Alouettes and Argonauts for 2018. We're going to talk some CFL football. So I guess the key question going into this week, Joe, is why do the Major League Baseball schedule makers always screw the Rockies in the postseason? No, that's not the question. The question is, let's do the question first. We're going to talk some transactions that happened today, but I want to talk the question first because this is really starting to obsess me. What is happening in Edmonton? Can Edmonton even make the playoffs at this point?
Well, they can, but it's not. It's looking a little bit less likely every given week, doesn't it?
Well, of course. Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, it strikes me that they're heading in the wrong direction. I guess we can talk about this a little bit later. But, wow, another egregious loss for the Eskimos, who are on a slide last week. But we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm doing things all out of order here because I'm trying to break out of my depression. In any case, let's talk about a couple of transactions or from the rats leaving the sinking ship department. The Montreal Alouettes, the eliminated Montreal Alouettes, made a couple of trades today, which, as we're recording this, is the 10th of October. That's a Wednesday. Chris Ackie was shipped off to the Ottawa Redblacks, and Philip Blake and National, Philip Lavoie, go to the Riders.
Yeah, Chris Jones looking to add a little bit of depth to try to chase that second place in the West, because first place is looking just a bit out of reach at the moment. But probably not a bad idea to see if they can get a few more reinforcements in there before they are no longer allowed to do so and keep them available for the playoffs. And for the price of a Canadian receiver they didn't seem to be using anyway, and a second round draft pick from, what was that? Was that 2019 or 2020? Because I know one had one and one had the other.
Let's see. Okay, so the Riders gave a second-round pick in 2020. Damn. Boy, we're going to be paying for Johnny for a while, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, now, I was hoping that maybe you could console me, Joe, by reiterating a classic from the Rouge, White, and Blue earlier this season, and to try and cheer me up a little bit for the remainder of this offseason. Oh, boy, this is... prospect is long here. This is a long off season, it looks like. Could you please again tell me the story, the theory of the Kent Austin revival of the Montreal Alouettes?
Sure. He's not doing anything right now, and the Alouettes need somebody to come in and just take over football operations, have a one-man show in place, because apparently based off of everything I'm seeing out of Montreal, it seems like there's nobody in charge there. So they need one guy in charge to go ahead and say, this is how we're going to set up our football team. They don't need Austin to go take him to a Grey Cup. They need Austin around there for 3 or 4 years to build the team back to respectability.
Yeah, to have a contender before the Atlantic Schooners are a contender, basically. But I like this theory. I guess now that is all I am hoping for. Let's talk briefly about last week's games. Oh, I've been waiting for a week, Joe, because I guess recently we've both been really busy in our personal lives. But I've been waiting, like, all not quite all week, but almost all week, to talk to you about this one. Winnipeg Blue Bombers 40, Ottawa Redblacks 32. Exciting, edge-of-your-seat stuff. I sincerely hope you watch this one, Joe, because it had, like, everything that you'd want in a game, including an overtime win by the Blue Bombers. Given that Winnipeg in 2018 has been an emotional roller coaster for fans, how are you feeling?
I'd have felt a lot better if they finished it off in the first place, but it was nice to see them actually make the big play when the time demanded it in overtime, having that happen a little bit sooner near the end of the fourth quarter would have got me probably another hour of sleep, but you know.
Yes, I almost gave up on this, but I refused to be burned by the no lead is safe rule one more time. It happened to me twice this season already. I can't let it happen again. So, wow, very interesting game. Winnipeg looking like, again, good Winnipeg. This team has really been a streaky team in the really true sense of the word. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but especially if you look at their results this season, it's a run of wins, a run of losses, run of wins, run of losses. Right now they're riding that run of wins, which they'll probably need next week. Hey, Joe, that's kind of a key game. That's kind of a key game. One of the things I wanted to point out before that will make this season really interesting is the interesting thing about the Argos and the Alouettes being eliminated so early is that it makes basically all the rest of the games relevant. Unless the Eskimos or BC Lions completely wipe out and lose out. I guess if they both do, then you could still have it come down to the final week of the season. But literally, that last playoff spot will probably be decided in the last week of the season. So that's pretty cool, because I remember last year, I think the playoff schedule was set, I think, with two games to go, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty well built in. Yeah, there was a lot of wasted time near the end of that season.
Yeah, last year we had a lot of meaningless games. In fact, the Alouettes won one of those. So, but this year, yeah, those Western teams, all those games are meaningful. Ottawa and Hamilton, it looks like, are going to be fighting it down to the end too, especially if Hamilton wins this weekend. Right, second game of the last weekend was BC Lions 26, Toronto Argonauts 23. This game actually turned out pretty exciting. I liked this BC defense, showing up just in time for Solomon Elamimian's return. Davon Coleman, he was one of my heroes of the week. He had 2 interceptions. This was his 31st game. I looked this up. This was his 31st game as a CFL player, and this was his first interception and his second interception in Canadian ball so far. So congrats to Devon Coleman, who had a killer game. Really nice, putting a lot of pressure all day on Mr. McLeod. I love the very nice looky what I found interception, I think, in the second quarter, too. Any takeaways from this game from you, Joe? What did you think?
I took Toronto way too long to get James Franklin back involved, because guess what he did the moment he showed up? He turned the Argos around and got them some points. That's something they haven't done in a while.
Yeah. Well, going to guys too late or at the inappropriate time, I think, has been the theme of this Argos season. I'm sure Dr. Rouge would agree. Do you suppose it's just a coincidence, Joe? I noticed this thing, and I've been waiting to talk to Dr. Rouge. We've been like ships in the night the past 2-3 weeks now. But in week 15, I noticed the first single point that Dr. Rouge would not have liked. Do you know what I'm referring to?
You're going to have to enlighten me. I'm not remembering it offhand.
Okay. So, BC...
No, I think...
BC at Toronto. Okay. Toronto goes to kick the field goal. And it wasn't even that long a field goal. It was within 30 to 40 yards. And down by 2 in the final minute.
Oh, the Saskatchewan game. Yep. Now I know what you're saying.
No, it's Saskatchewan. I'm sorry. Right. And sure enough... misses the field goal. They concede the Rouge, of course. Toronto loses the game they could have won. And I've been wanting to ask Dr. Rouge if this was a Rouge he did not like.
I don't know if that's a thing.
He probably had mixed feelings about it. Is probably the short of it. Right. Okay. Well, let me ask you this one, Joe. Did you watch Calgary Stampeders 12, Montreal Alouettes 6? Kind of looked a little bit like a Red Sox game.
Yeah, I was in and out on that. I did take Monday off to try to watch some of the games and watched a lot less than I had intended to, but I don't think I missed a hell of a lot, did I?
Well, this was the thing. I remember talking with you about this last week, and it was your opinion that the Stamps were going to blow them out. And it was my opinion that the Stamps, being as trash as they are in the, let's say, quote-unquote, skill player department at running back and wide receiver, that they were going to, you know, just try and take it easy, just grind it out. I mean, the Alouettes are, as I've been ranting about all season, terrible at holding onto the ball. By far the worst team in the league in terms of time of possession. And as it turns out, we both were right, because Calgary was in fact grinding it out, and they should have blown out the Alouettes in this game, but Bo Levi Mitchell threw 3 pretty ugly, pretty juvenile interceptions, if you ask me. Basically, drive killers. At least 2 of them. I'm drawing a blank on the 3rd one, but I'm thinking, yeah, this was in the middle of a drive, if not towards the end of the drive, when they're in Montreal territory. I mean, very un-Bo, very uncharacteristic of Bo Levi Mitchell, but, you know, that was the difference. That was the difference. That's why this was 12-6. But, you know, same old story with the Alouettes or other teams that are just not up to snuff with their competition. There was never any question that Calgary was going to pull this one out. Of course, take over in the fourth quarter, 12 points, get a touchdown, you get the field goal, okay, whatever. I suppose I should report, because this is an American podcast on Canadian football. Hey, Johnny, 18 of 29, 250 yards, 1 interception versus 0 touchdowns, and minus 3 personal interactions with his teammates. Oh my God, this is a nightmare. This is far, far worse than I could have imagined. In any case,
far from over.
Well, it's not far from over.
This year might be, but he's under contract next year too, ain't he?
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to be able to pawn him off. I don't think that there's going to be golf or any quarterbacks next offseason. So
actually, now that you mention that, a lot of quarterbacks are free agents, but they may be waiting for the CBA to be fixed up so that they can officially sign. But what happens to the team that, if there is a merry-go-round that goes on, what happens to that team? Because Montreal is now sitting on Manziel for next year and Vernon Adams for the next two. And I'm not sure about Antonio Pipkin's contract status, but aren't rookie deals two-year deals as well? Yes. Does that give him a touch of leverage to maybe get a draft pick or two back for one of the other two guys? Because I know nobody's going to pawn up for Johnny. But what about the other two? Is there actually some sort of master plan in place?
Market for Vernon Adams? Wow.
Well, he's only been traded how many times now?
Yeah.
So there does seem to be a market for him.
Well, I guess there's a market for getting him. I don't know if there's a market for keeping him.
No. But I'm just saying, if that quarterback merry-go-round does decide to start spinning, who the heck knows what's going to happen?
That's very interesting. Well, you can bet with Commissioner Randy Ambrosi in the big chair that it will be equanimous to players while also being fair to owners, I'm sure. Because this man is a master. This man's a genius. I think as a player, he will not allow the players to get screwed over. But as he has much consciousness towards the business dealings of this league, I'm sure he won't. I'm sure he won't be highly favorable to the owner's detriment. Right. Last game of the weekend. Saskatchewan Roughriders 19, Edmonton Eskimos 12. Okay. So here we go. Here are the Eskimos again. I mean, this is obsessing me. You know, here is the time, again, I've said this before, here is the time of the season when the Eskimos are classically, with Mike Riley, coming together. You know, this is when their guys are coming off the injured list, typically. Now, I know a lot of that is coincidence, but some of that is because the depth of this roster has been amazing the last 4 or 5 years. And in fact, this year, the depth on the offensive line has been great. They haven't missed a beat there. They've been giving really good protection all year. But, I mean, this is a team that now has not scored anything besides field goals in the last 9 quarters. Not even a rouge. Okay, no rouges, no touchdowns, no safeties. In 9 quarters. They're 1-5 in the second half. Right now, they're half a game behind BC. And I don't know. I should be listening to Esk Empire podcast this week, because you got to be wondering if they're wondering if it's over. If Eskimo fans are wondering if it's over. I'm sure they're you know, keeping the brave face and you know, having high hopes. But BC Lions this week are getting back Lule and Elamimian. Even if they lose this week, they're still even in the loss column, as we like to say down here south of the border. You know, it's like, wow, how the mighty have fallen very suddenly in the case of the Edmonton Eskimos. One bad half of football can wipe you out. Okay, so Joe, for the big question of the week, for the tricky question of the week, should we wait till after the break? Should we tease it, or should we do it right now?
Why wait? Let's do the big question.
Okay, let's do the big question of the week, because this occurred to me during this Riders Eskimo game. You know, I mean, and again, this season in the CFL, I don't want to say, Joe, that I'm losing the faith, but this season in the CFL, statistics have been lying. Okay, and here you have Mike Riley again, you know, statistical leader of the CFL. Did you know he's leading the league in rushing touchdowns? That is twisted, right? So, badass stat line, but wow, the Eskimos are awful. I mean, the production, if you just look at the numbers on Riley, except in that touchdown column, the numbers are not down. But like I say, in the past 9 quarters, they have what? Let's see, they have 15 points. Not that few, but it's 28, maybe? Less than 30 in the last 3 games combined. I mean, who is the MOP of this league, is my question.
I'm going to guess it's going to be a quarterback, just because that's the way it tends to be.
Okay. All right.
And really, there's only one team that has a quarterback that would qualify as the main starter, and the team is undoubtedly a good one, and that's Bo Levi Mitchell. So I think he gets the West nod simply because there's not a heck of a lot or else around. There's not really a guy out there tearing it up rushing, having a fantastic year where you have to pay attention to him. The S do have some pretty numbers, but they're in last place right now. You don't get an MOP from a last place team generally.
Right.
Which wipes out Toronto and Montreal. So for the East nominee, it would probably be Mazzoli, because he's got quite good numbers. I'd like to see them with a couple more wins, and if they win the East, if they come and beat Ottawa in the next couple weeks here and take over first place, I have no doubt he's the Eastern candidate. And if he does that, and if they end up doing that, I could see him winning the whole thing. Just to see if Dr. Rouge is listening, and to get a sense as to when he's listening, that it should be Lewis Ward or Justin Medlock. So I'll know exactly when he listens if he does. Mazzoli's probably my dark horse in this case.
What if Hamilton does the Hamilton thing, Mazzoli does the Mazzoli thing, he has a bunch of 300-yard games coming down the stretch, and they end up like sub-500, and they don't win the East?
Well, then I think Bo wins by default. Just simply
so I
because...
can't sell you, so I couldn't sell you on a defensive player?
No.
It
would take... Okay. Something completely unprecedented, like a stupid number of sacks or interceptions or something where it's just he's the best defensive player in the league by far and there's no question about it, to even have a chance with the way the award system is set up.
That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate.
It is. And because I have a sense of who you're going to tell me. But...
Okay. I'll do it like the logical way, like yourself.
Uh-huh.
But I'm coming from this viewpoint because look. Okay. I mean, argue this point. Okay. Tell me I'm wrong. I don't think that there is one really consistent, really outstanding offense in the CFL this year. There isn't. Winnipeg could be. But, you know, they have 4-game losing streaks.
Calgary has scored a lot of points. They're probably on par with Winnipeg right now for points. Right around par with Winnipeg for points per game. They've got one more game in hand. They could pass Winnipeg at some point. They'll have over 500 points, I'm pretty sure.
But do you really think that this is an outstanding offense? Have you really been blown away by this?
No, but you just get used to Calgary being good, and you kind of just you don't pay attention as much.
Okay. Well, I mean, my other part of this argument is I think inarguably there have been two well above average defenses this year in Calgary and Saskatchewan. And I think Calgary has been pretty much consistently great, except when they're giving up 40 to Saskatchewan or Edmonton. 16 good games is pretty good still. I mean, I would have... It's a good thing I don't vote, because I would have no problem casting my vote for Charleston Hughes. You know, or Alex Singleton. And I like Singleton just because I have a man crush on him. But also because if Singleton could do it, he could get MOP, defensive MOP, Canadian Player of the Year. Could he take like other awards? But he could have a great awards day if Singleton won. And Singleton has, you know, he leads the league in tackles still, and he's the leader of that defense. But Hughes is having a monster year. He's having like an all-star year, like an all-time year, like a Hall of Fame year, like a career year for, you know, Hall of Fame level player. He's having a great year. So, I don't know. This is going to be really interesting. I'm surprised more of the CFL folks aren't talking about this, unless they're just assuming that it's Mazzoli, it's between Mazzoli and Mitchell.
Yeah, I would think that that's where their assumptions lie, which is why it went that way.
That's unfortunate.
There are certain things where you have a good point on this, but I don't think enough people are going to think the way you do to make it a thing.
Yeah, there's too much bias to offense. There's too much bias. Way too much. I mean, I think you're right in that a defensive player has to dominate, like Solomon Elamimian did. But I mean, even then, you know, I mean, he was the leader of an awesome defense. You know, I mean, he was brilliant that year. But, you know, I mean, so was the rest of his defense. It was very, very, very good. You know, it's the same with these guys. It's the same with the Singleton. It's the same with the Hughes, you know. I mean, even Micah Johnson. In any case, all right, let's go to the break, and then we'll talk next week's games. Next week's games, we have, of course, four games on the slate. Montreal is going into the bye week. Perhaps they can figure out how to cobble together a roster now that you're down three more players that you would think, you know, might be useful. But, hey, we've got, I guess all of these games are significant, but I don't expect too much out of this first game. The Hamilton Tiger Cats are 7.5-point favorites going into Toronto. I guess the only real problem that the Tiger Cats have to face is this has all the makings of a trap game. Do you think they're going to fall for the trap?
I had to think about it for an extra second. I don't think they do. And I think it's because they're going to be able to put up a lot of points. That defense in Toronto hasn't been all that good this year.
It's been getting worse, too.
Yeah, so I think Hamilton's going to be able to put up enough points to escape a trap. It is going to be closer than people think, I would imagine. But I do think the away team advantage in Tim Hortons East is going to help Hamilton in this one. Because it's a big game for Hamilton, so you're going to have a lot of their fans in the stands. So yeah. That's going to help.
This is true.
So I see it. I see this one, Hamilton somewhere in the 40s, Toronto's in the low 30s, and Hamilton has one score near the end of the game that makes it look like a pretty decent win, but in reality, they had scored when they were up by less than a touchdown to make the spread look more impressive.
Right. Right, so you're gonna break the hearts of all the bettors who take, you know, Toronto plus 7.5. Right?
Exactly, so we'll go Hamilton 42, Toronto 31.
Wow. Okay, so take the over. don't think about the points, but take the over. Okay. Wow. Why would you guess Toronto's going to score a lot of points? Because they're playing so loose.
Well, they have nothing to lose, which is right. Always something to be afraid of when you're a team that has something to lose. The other thing is, I think Franklin's playing for his job next year, and he's got some.
Wow.
So he'll have something to lose, which completely defeats the logic of the last thing I said. But he won't have to worry so much about the end result because they're done anyway. So he can play a little bit more loose and go out there and try to make play after play after play without having to worry too much of the consequences of throwing one or two picks. Maybe if he gets to three or four, maybe he's better start worrying about it. But
yeah,
I think he can take some gambles and make some throws here, knowing that his team season's done.
Ironically, too, with De'Ron Carter on the roster, I mean, this receiving core looks better now than it has all season. Ironically, now that they're out of it. So, and not everybody can play loose, you know. I think Toronto, yeah, this could be quite the pinball machine of a game here in terms of scoreboard. But yeah, I'll take Hamilton. I'll take Toronto plus the points. What the hell? I'll say it's closer than a touchdown. Lots of points to be scored, though. Right, Saskatchewan Rough Riders are a 3.5-point underdog at Winnipeg. So basically, like they say in Vegas for NFL games and college games, they usually give you 3 to 4 points for home field advantage. That's kind of what it looks like here. It's kind of like the book is saying if these two teams met on a neutral field. Like, for example, in the Grey Cup, could happen that it would basically be a tie. Now, in a news story that broke it was today, Wednesday the 10th, the Weston Dressler had to leave practice with an injury, apparent injury. Came back to practice, though, so he's not going to have to undergo surgery immediately or anything. But, geez, dinged up. Did your heart stop a beat when you heard this, Joe? And how do you like this game?
Well, it didn't, because I saw him returning to practice tweet before I saw the he was hurt in practice tweet, so it didn't really bother me all that much.
Sometimes it's good to get these things out of sequence.
Yeah, and he's got a role to play, but he could play that role a little bit dinged up, because he's not going to be the guy that blows you away over the top. So if he's a half a step slower than he usually is, it's not going to be as big of a deal as, say, if it's your speed burner. So, I'm not going to be too worried about a minor thing with him. This game's a tough one for me to call here, because we know that Winnipeg can score points in bunches. We know they can turn the ball over in bunches. They could do both in the same game, which makes it really tough for me to go one way or the other with this. I sat through one of these alive between these two teams, and the Bombers were the better team at the Banjo Bowl, except for the fact that every time they got into scoring range, Matt Nichols would hand the ball to a rider and say, here, have a touchdown.
Yeah.
So as long as that doesn't happen, I think the Bombers pull this one out, and it's going to be close to that point spread. It's not going to be a blow-up by any stretch. I just can't see the Riders going down the field with less than 3 minutes remaining and scoring a game-winning touchdown. Because That's already happened this year in this series. I don't think lightning strikes twice there. I think it's a close game, but I don't think the Riders are able to finish this one off. That said, they're darn close to clinching that second playoff spot. I still think they're going to end up there. I just don't think this game goes their way.
That's the insane thing about the Riders this season. As good as they have been in general, if you look at the whole picture, they look pretty good. They look like they're alone on that second tier, because basically, statistically, they are. But rarely has this team come together and both sides have played at their best. You know, almost never do you have the defense killing it and the offense killing it. Last couple of games, it's been the offense killing it and the defense kind of putting up. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Last game, it was mostly defense again. You know, again, 19-13 or 19-12, whatever it was. You know, this is a defensive game. You just can't tell. And perhaps that lack of clutch is going to kill them in a close game, in this close game, I should say. Because, again, like you said, it happened once before, and you can't count on it happening again. I'm going to take Winnipeg to win straight up. I do not like that point spread. I would not bet that if I were gambling it. However, I got another one for you that I just made up right now. Last two games, Andrew Harris has had 20 carries. So let's put the over-under on 15.5, over and under, over or under on this game, Joe.
I think it's going to be over. No, actually, I take that back. He has not done all that well against the Riders this year, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going to say under.
Yeah, let's see. And it's two games against... Well, it's very telling because, you know, again, it's a situation where if Harris has under 15 or under, they're probably going to lose, right? And, you know, one becomes a function of the other. You know, we can't afford to pass. We must pass more in this game, so he's not going to get many rushing carries.
Against Saskatchewan... That didn't really stop them in either of the two games, except for the just ungodly mistakes.
Well, in week 12, he had a pretty decent game, 15 carries for 150 yards.
Yeah, and then the Banjo Bowl, the Riders decided to sell out to stop him. Succeeded.
Yes.
The bomber passing game tore them apart, except for just some inexplicably dumb plays.
Yeah.
Which I don't see being repeated at this point.
Oh, no. That game was a freak show. I mean, that was the game where the defense and special teams scored 32 frickin' points. Yep. I keep repeating that, but it's just mind-blowing. I've never seen anything like that. NFL, college, you know, CFL, anything. High school. I've never seen it. Yes, you're right. It's a good point. When Harris is keyed on massively, those are his worst games. It happened twice this year. It happened against, I've got it right here. It happened in week 11 against Calgary, 7 carries for 13 yards. He did have some catches in that game, but not enough to make up for that. And then in your Banjo Bowl, you know, 10 carries for 21 yards. You know, while interceptions and fumbles were happening on all the other plays in that game. But we don't need to relive that, right, Joe? Next game, Ottawa Red Blacks, 3-point underdogs. Interestingly enough, at Edmonton, the book believes Edmonton snaps the skid. I'll tell you what, you know, speaking of inconsistency, if they snap the skid against anybody, it could be at home against Ottawa. I'm looking for Edmonton to win. What about you, Joe?
I think Ottawa does it. I think
okay.
Ottawa's had a couple of games this year that really should have gone their way and just inexplicably did not. If those games go their way, they look a hell of a lot better in the standings than they do right now. I think they are the best team in the East, and I think they prove it by basically hammering Edmonton left, right, and center in this game.
Hmm. Okay. All right. What if they have the capacity to do it? I like Edmonton at home. I mean, again, I don't like the lack of weaponry in that offense, but jeez, they can't be this bad. This 1-5 skid cannot continue.
They might
What happened to that team that scored 42 against Calgary?
They scored 48 against Calgary. But sorry, 48. That's an outlier. That's really an outlier because they've had a couple of games where they've looked really, really good, and then a couple of games where they've just looked awful. But let me go over what their schedule has been like since August 23rd.
At Hamilton,
at Calgary, home against Calgary, at Ottawa, home against Winnipeg, at Saskatchewan, home against Ottawa, which is this next week, at BC, and home against Winnipeg. They had the free spaces on the bingo cards really early. They did win 3 out of 4 in that stretch, but they haven't really taken it to anybody else except for that Calgary game. And that Calgary was one Hail Mary away from taking that out of their hands, too.
Yeah, but you know what? The argument is, Joe, that's a CFL schedule. You know, I remember, I think it was not last year, but the year before that, where they got 2 byes in the last 4 weeks of the season. I mean, sometimes the cookie crumbles that way, and those are the teams you got to face. But the truth is, you can't be like complaining how you're not in contention because of the schedule and lose 30-3 to Winnipeg at home. Yep. I mean, sorry. Oh, your schedule's tough? Well, like you say, Joe, that was your bye week. You know,
the free
and
space
you lost.
Right. So what I'm trying to point out here is they don't have any soft landings coming up, if there even is one in this league, to really wake themselves up and get bounce up and try to shoot back the other way up the standings. They're going to have to beat somebody that's better than them to do that, and I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off.
Well, according to the latest, you know, official CFL.ca power poll, there's nobody better than them. You know, except for, I mean, there's nobody worse than them except for the two teams that have been eliminated. You know, so there you go. They don't get to play them anymore. So, you know, they won those games. All right. I just wonder about the Red Blacks. You know, every time we think they're coming into shape, every time we think they're going to get control of this East, don't get me started, they don't. So I'm just going to go with Riley. And besides, you know, if you've got you don't have Hamilton losing. So, yeah, Hamilton's got to win to keep Mazzoli for MOP alive. Right, okay, finally, BC Lions. Now, this line really interested me. BC Lions, 10.5-point underdogs at Calgary. Obviously, the book believes that BC Lions can't win away. They really haven't much this season, but wow. Do you really think that the Stamps are going to blow them out?
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Okay, what's your reasoning?
Well, my reasoning is that Calgary is just the better team between the two. You're either going to have Jennings or Lule coming off of an injury as a starter in this one. I don't think either of those two guys are going to be able to tear Calgary apart. I've actually seen Jennings play against Calgary live, and that didn't go well. And he hasn't gotten any better since then. How about that? BC has been playing the East pretty much straight up since September, since the beginning of September. They did have an impressive win at home against Ottawa, and they did go into Montreal and take care of business there. But the last 3 weeks have felt just a little bit less than impressive for a team that's fighting for the playoff spot. They have taken care of business for the most part, which is at the end of the day what they needed to do, but they needed a really weird comeback against Hamilton to make it happen. Then they go out to Hamilton and just get smoked.
Yeah.
And then they were at home against Toronto with all the advantages inherent to that except for a late start, and barely came out on top there. And we know how well Toronto's been playing lately, which is not. So going into Calgary, that seems like a little bit of a steep task for a team that's been playing the way they have the last 3 weeks.
But the thing is, BC has been finding ways to win. And Edmonton, who used to be masterful at this, you know, Riley's Edmonton teams, hasn't. You know, they just can't find the ways to win.
Sure.
And next
week, those two teams will play each other, and that will be a relevant thing to be thinking about. But I don't think BC is going to find a way to win against Calgary, because Calgary has made its bones the last 5 years doing just that to everybody else.
I mean, you brought up the Montreal game. That's the only game the Lions have won on the road this season. That's insane. That's ridiculous. You know, but what it tells me is that Wally Buono is doing enough to win these games. He's doing enough to get his teams to win these games. He's taking advantage of those late night BC games, you know, and that's it. You know, he's using the home field advantage. He's biding his time. I think Lule's going to be just fine this week. I think Wally kept him out an extra week, just in case. I think he knows they're going to lose this game. Because, yeah, they are going to lose this game. But here's another thing. Edmonton's problem is that they've handed all the power in this equation over to BC. BC's half a game up on them, and they have 4 games versus Edmonton's 3. Plus, BC has a slightly easier schedule, I think, than does Edmonton. They've lost control.
And they have Edmonton at home next week. Now, a 7 o'clock Pacific start isn't going to be too late for Edmonton, but Edmonton doesn't do well in BC. They just haven't been doing. Nobody seems to be able to consistently win in BC year after year, except for maybe Calgary. So BC's got at Calgary, then home against Edmonton, so they could put Edmonton in the rearview mirror with a win there. And then they might have 2 games against teams that don't have anything to play for anymore. At Saskatchewan on October 27th, and home against Calgary on November 3rd. Games that BC will probably need to win, but the other two will be so locked into their positions that they won't have to play their starters the whole game. So, you're not kidding about BC being in the driver's seat right now when it comes to their relationship with Edmonton. Because we just talked about Edmonton's remaining schedule. No free spaces there. and BC may have two. Plus, they get the Eskimos at home.
Yeah. They're looking good. I'm taking Calgary minus the 10.5, basically. I just don't think. I think they're going to learn from last week. I think they're not going to play as lazy as they did last week. I think that they're going. I think Bo Levy is going to make up for those three. Yeah, just shockingly, almost amateurish interceptions that he threw in that game. So I don't think they're going to mess around so much in this game. I think they're going to take care of business. And yeah, I mean, they're at least 10.5 points better than Lions. But what I think will be the most interesting thing for the Lions is, of course, you know, Lule's coming back, Elamimian's coming back, like we've talked about, and Terrell Sutton, who we haven't seen since the acquisition to bring him over. So he'll be playing in this game. Now, again, I don't expect much out of Terrell. I don't really expect much out of Solomon Elamimian. I do think that Travis will be fine. Travis Lule will be fine, even against the Calgary defense. But, Joe, more and more and more, you think about Wally Bonas last year, and does this team seem like a team of destiny? To me, they do.
It almost feels like it's setting up perfectly for them, just the way things have fallen.
Yep.
Because we talk about the crossover team going over and not having a lot of success against the East. Well, it happens to be that the fourth best team in the West, so they shouldn't be better than the first two teams in the East. But it's a tough road to hoe either as a third place team in the West or a third place team in the East come playoff time. But if anybody is well situated to take care of that, it might very well be BC if they could figure out how to win on the road, because they are starting to play better at the right time, or at least getting a little bit of luck in their scheduling, because they haven't played all that great the last couple weeks, but they do have a chance to get on a real roll if they can take care of business against Edmonton and then have two games against teams that don't have anything to play for. They could get a little
bit
of momentum.
While they're still integrating,
While
they're still integrating these veteran, Grey Cup experienced presences.
Yeah.
So you see, it's all coming into shape at the perfect time for BC.
It could very well be. Now, let me ask you a question. You're a BC fan or a BC player or a BC ownership, whatever you want to say. You're rooting for BC now all of a sudden. Which road would you rather take? Would you rather go into Regina and then into Calgary, or would you rather go into Hamilton and into Ottawa?
No, Hamilton and Ottawa. Hamilton and Ottawa.
Right.
Yeah, because they're more vulnerable. They're more vulnerable teams. I think Saskatchewan is dangerous in the playoffs.
I think so too. I am not looking forward to the Bombers and the Riders.
No.
Game number four of the season in Mosaic in November. I'm
in
not
a
looking
playoff
forward to
game.
That. No.
Right, with
a
the
great,
confidence
a great
com- that they're going to beat.
I wasn't anywhere close to as hardcore of a CFL fan as I was back when they faced each other in the Grey Cup back in 2007. That game damn near killed me. I still can't watch a replay of that thing. It's going to drive me crazy when these two teams play in the playoffs, because that's the way this is all going to end up, isn't it?
Well, now you know how Ryder fans feel about 13th man. They can't watch any of that game either. I am, as a Bombers fan, I'm dreading that game. I'm dreading that game already. I'm thinking of some way that they can connive ending up in fourth place in the West. But because that could be ugly. I mean, in that game, overconfidence is your only friend. You better hope that the Riders are overconfident, or that Zach Caleros, you know, is bad Zach, because you could win that game that way. But that's far off into the future. We're on to next week, and we're on to next week's podcast, because we'll sign off on this podcast. Joe, you got any last thoughts here? Any prayers, any sacrifices you want to offer up for your Blue Bombers?
No. it just is what it is at this point, isn't it?
Wow. You know, I hate that expression, and you just made it worse. It is what it is, isn't it? Oh, my God. Dude, you're killing me here. All right. With the death of the pronoun, the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast leaves you. My name's Oz Davis for my co-host Joe Pritchard and our co-host in absentia, Dr. Rouge. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the games coming down the home stretch of CFL season 2018.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.